And we're holding on page Chaf Vav in Psachim Os Nun Beis. Continuing with lists of different kinds of people, we said before in the Gemara we had three types of people that Hashem makes an announcement about them, three kinds of people that Hashem loves, three kinds of person Hashem hates, and so forth. So now the Gemara continues. I brought in a das of lasan. There are four kinds of people where the das does not stand them. So the Rashbam says it means other people can't stand them, can't tolerate that such people should that there should be such people. Rashi actually goes further. Rashi says they can't even stand themselves. They themselves realize soon enough how bad off they are. Anyway, Abraham there as follows. Dalgeya, the first one is a poor person who's proud. Now, a rich person is not supposed to be a Balgaiva either, but at least it's sort of understandable because of his riches. But a poor person, it's intolerable. People can't even imagine how there should be such a thing, and he himself ought to realize soon enough where he stands. The second one, Osher Mechachesh, the second one is a rich person who denies claims against him. Again, here you have the other way around. If he was poor and somebody's claiming, you owe me money, and he's saying no, and he's stalling or whatever, you could sort of understand. But if he's rich, then there's no excuse for it. The third one, Zaken Menaif, an old man who commits. Right, but the point is, in other words, if he's rich and he's proud, or he's poor and denies claims against him, it's not right, but at least it's a little more understandable. At least you can rationalize why he would be that way. But when he's poor and gaivadik, or rich and denying claims against him, it's you can't even rationalize that. And Rashi says again, the people themselves who do these things, eventually they come to regret it. The nivzim hein be'enei atzman, and they feel themselves to be worthless because they realize, how could I be sort of thing? How could I be a dal and be geya at the same time? And the same thing with the other ones. The third one, zokin minoif, an old man who commits niuf. Where again, when he's younger, not that it's right for him to do, but at least you can understand how what would lead him to do that. But he's a zokin anyway; he barely has any strength anymore, and he's still manaif. Then it's intolerable. And the fourth one, of Parnas Hamisgar, a leader of the community who puts on airs over the community for nothing. Meaning, Rashi says that he acts with srara towards them. He acts as high and mighty. You owe me certain trappings of respect and certain whatever. And then when they're in trouble, then he doesn't stand up for them to actually accomplish anything for them. So that's that kind of thing is a ein adas of lossen. It's one thing if at least he accomplishes something useful, then he has a right to be overbearing towards the tzinar. Right, but at least you can understand that he'd be overbearing to the tzibur. Look, you all owe me one, so because at least I'm accomplishing something. But he's not even accomplishing anything and still demanding the perks and everything of his office, then that's it. The Yesh Omnim, some say there's a fifth one. A man divorces his wife, then he remarries her, then he divorces her again, and he remarries her a third time. You'd think after two times he'd learned his lesson already. But the Tanakhama, what does the Tanakhama answer to that? That's not Ein Adas Tziv Lasan. It could happen that her ksuba is a large amount, the amount he has to pay off for her ksuba, or he has children with her, and so he's not able to stay divorced from her for very long. We had before, a couple of weeks back, we had the story with Hosea, where Hashem tells him, your wife, look at what she is, you ought to be separating from her, especially considering like what Moshe Rabbeinu was separated from his wife, and Hosea says, I can't have children from her. So the same thing over here, she may be very difficult to get along with, and therefore he keeps on divorcing her, but he realizes soon enough, you know what, I can't live without her because I have children from her. So therefore the Tanakhama says you can't say on that Ein Adas Tziv Lasan. It may not be the right thing, but at least it's a you can understand what's a, you can understand what's going on. Next, Chamisha Dvarim Tziva Knanis Bonav. The original Knan from this week's parasha, Chum's son, gave five commandments to his sons. Now the Rashbam says we don't literally mean that he actually gave these instructions to his children. What we mean is avodim, where after all, eved avodim yir oru knan, eved avodim yir le'echav, avodim and people of that nation habitually have these habits that we're going to list over here, and therefore it's almost as if they received it to be Yerusha from their ancestor Knan. Anyway, the first one is ehavu zeh zeh, love one another. Ehavu is hagezel, love stealing. Ervos has Zima, love Znus. Zima is another word for Znus. Vesinu asadenechem, hate your masters. Ba'al tadabru emes, and don't speak the truth. Now, so Maharsha explains, we see all of those have to do with being an Eved. So we just said before, the last piece we said yesterday was that three types of creatures love one another, and one of them was Avodim, because they're very lowly, and therefore like none of them think like the other one is going to take over my position of power, because what power? So therefore, they have this habit of loving one another. They steal, ma'ba avodim, ma'ba gezel, like it says in Pirkei Avos. Zima also, ma'ba shvachas, ma'ba zima, as it continues in that same Mishnah. Hate your masters, because if they're avodim, they have masters, and everyone hates his master. And al tadabru emes, as we find, Maharsha says, you have a pasuk that mentions knan v'yodim mozni mirim. We have that pasuk quoted earlier in Omer Sechta, where actually there the Gemara explained that knan doesn't mean a person from the nation of Knan. It meant a merchant who has scale, who has dishonest scales, and he likes to cheat. But here Maharsha is understanding, apparently, that in one sense it means Knan himself, meaning the descendants of Knan, that they habitually cheat, and that's the Al Tadabru Emes. Ben Yehoyada explains actually really what it is the central thing in all of this is Ehevus Hazima, is to love Znus. The other four things, he says, are all to support that. Because what's going to happen? Znus costs money, after all. It costs money to go to a Zoyna. So therefore, so how is an Eved supposed to have any money? Mashakona Eved Kona Rabbi. So the first thing he tells them, so they're going to be stealing from their master. But if an Eved might be afraid to do that because his fellow Avodim might snitch on him. So Ehevu says, yeah, love one another so you don't snitch on one another. Then the Ervos HaGezel, so that way you'll have money to support your habit. The Ervos HaZimo is the central thing. V'sinu HaSadenechem means you have to think of an Eved, if he doesn't hate his master, after all, his master has work for him to do. If he likes his master, he's going to want to accomplish his work. If not, then he's going to try to get out of it and leave the work unfinished so he can sneak off to do his things. And then the fifth thing, Ba'al Tadabru Emes, they have to be in the habit of not telling the truth, so that if the master catches them and says, no, that work that I told you to do, why is it not finished? Then they'll have a ready-made excuse. If they're not habitually lying, then they're going to struggle to come up with an excuse on the spot. So therefore, all of them are really to support that, he says. Next, Shisha Dvorim Nemru Besus. There are six things that it says about a horse. Oyeves Znus, he loves Znus. The horses, male horses in particular, are very much into mating. Oyev Amochama, it loves war. You can find Psukim actually in Sefer Iyov when Hashem is telling Iyov, do you understand how I run the world? And he gives him the example, look at the horse that I created, that he has a natural love to rush off to war. So that's like all Gemara is saying over here. Veruha Gasa, the horse is very proud. Umoyas Shena, he hates to sleep, which we know in other Gemaras. That's why we talk about the shear of sleep, for example, that David HaMelech would only sleep Shitin Nishmi, 60 breaths, like a Keshenas Asus, like the way a horse sleeps. Because horses don't sleep very much at a time. This is where we get the concept where if you sleep for a half hour or more, then you have to wash Negovaser, because that's the amount of time that a horse sleeps at a time. A horse eats a lot and then produces very little waste, which represents, in other words, like it's a greedy type of animal. And it walks along the sides of the roads, meaning like, which is like the way that a proud person does. Like, I'm too important to walk in the middle where all the other people and all the other horses are. I have to stay to the side where I'm by myself. Some say there's a seventh thing, a horse tries to kill its owner in war. How is that for the Yerushalmi that brings on this two things? Number one, because it's attracted to the female horses. So you have a male horse that you're riding. The enemy has a female horse, and your horse doesn't care that you want to go to war and fight. He wants to mate with the female horse. So therefore he endangers his rider. And second of all, because it'll stop any old time to urinate without paying attention to that I'm putting my rider in danger. So therefore, so that's my vakish ladig by the mochamim. Marsha points out about this, you know, you have, therefore, when we have in Oz Yashu, Sus V'roichle Roma V'yom, it means there's a certain similarity between the horses and their riders. The Mitzriim themselves are called Rahav, which means the proud ones. Here we're saying among the characteristics of a horse is it's very proud of himself. Well, Oshiro Hashem, Ki Go'oi Go'a. Hashem was the proud one over all the proud ones, and Sus V'roichle Roma V'yom. He took the proud Mitzriim and their proud horses and dumped them in the Yamsuf.
Wild horses, right?
No, we're talking about domesticated horses, Bavashas. Ben Yehoyada actually points out in a Sefer Ben Yohu, the nafkamina of this is, the Gemara sometimes, when it gives such lists, sometimes the Gemara asks, L'may nafkamina, and the answer is L'mecha chomemko. It's necessary to know as far as buying and selling. Here, Ben Yohu explains it's the same kind of thing. If you buy a horse, and you find that now he'll just stop any old place to urinate, or he's all these other characteristics over there, don't go back to the guy who sold it to you and say, you sold me a defective horse. You should expect this is what horses are like. Next, the Gemara continues, Shmoino, Shiva rather, because you really only have a list of seven over here, Kiminudin Lashemayim, the following seven types of people are as if they were nidui before Hashem, meaning that Hashem is not interested in listening to his tefillahs, Elohein, and they are as follows. The first one, Misha Einlo Isha, a man who does not get married. Now, we had yesterday, Amiroyim, who didn't get married. That was evidently there was some other reason they couldn't find a shidduch yet. Here we're talking about a person who decides deliberately that he's not interested in getting married. So you have, this is the rare example, you have Ben Azai, for example, Nafshi Choshka Batorah, he's so in love with Torah that he can't have a normal marital relationship, but other than him, people are expected to get married. Number two, Mishi Yeshla Isha Ve'en Le Bonim Mimena. The second one is a man who does have a wife, but he doesn't have children. Here also, Tosfos says, we're talking about that it's Pshia. We're not talking about he doesn't have children because the Eibishter didn't bench him with any. It means that he's not trying to have children. The third one, Ve'ena Magausha, and he doesn't divorce her. Now, it is true, we said before, she might have a large ksuba. In fact, the Rif brings over here that there are girsa. In fact, in printed Gemara, it doesn't say the words Ve'ena Magausha. Just the fact that he's not Oisik Papiri Verivya itself is the problem. Anyway, Umish Yeshle Bonim Vein Magadlan Talmud Torah. The third one is he does have sons, but he doesn't raise them to learn Torah. He doesn't mind that they're going to stay Amei Oren. So such a person is Kinemundur Nolashmai. The next one, Misha Ein Letfilin Berosha. He doesn't have tefillin on his head or Vizroya or on his arm. But Tzitzis Bebigdo. He doesn't have Tzitzis on his garment. Now, strictly speaking, you know, Tzitzis is only a person is chayev and Tzitzis only if he actually is wearing a four-cornered garment. In principle, if a person does not regularly wear such a garment, he's technically not chayev and Tzitzis. Nevertheless, the Gemara points out in Menachos that the Idan Rischa, at a time when Hashem is angry at the world, then that may be a person may be subject to punishment for the fact that he failed to fulfill the mitzvah, even though technically he wasn't chayav. The Gemara calls it over there, tatsiki lemifshan and lemifter nafshach. Are you trying to make excuses and then ways around to get around doing the mitzvah? So therefore, so that's what we mean over here. Mezuzah b'pishoy, who doesn't have a mezuzah on his door. Umeneam in olam meraglav, or where he doesn't wear shoes on his feet, which we've learned several times already in the Gemara, that shoes are extremely important for a person. And a person who doesn't wear shoes is ois mensch, and he should even sell the beams of his house to buy shoes, etc. The yesh omrim af micha in a mesa b'chavura shal mitzvah. Yesh omrim, there's another one. Also somebody who does not join in a chavura shal mitzvah, in a group that's going to do a mitzvah, or Tosfos has a different girsa, not b'chavura shal mitzvah, but rather sudas mitzvah. And specifically Tosfos says that means, among others, a suda of a bris milah. Also, for example, we learned earlier in the Masechta that a Sudas Mitzvah also includes, for example, when a Talmid Chacham is marrying a Bas Koyen, or a Koyen is marrying a Bas Koyen. All of that, Tosfos says, only if he knows there are going to be decent Erlecha people over there. If he knows there's not, then he has a valid reason not to go. But it's based on this Gemara that was saying, Misha Einim Mesa B'chavura Shal Mitzvah, or B'Sudas Mitzvah, as Tosfos has the Girsa, this is where we get the minhag that we don't accept, that we don't invite people B'Fedosh to a Bris. Because if we invite them, and then they don't show up, then you have what we're saying over here, that they're Kiminud in Lashemayim. So therefore, we only inform them, and that way, if they don't come, then it's not a problem, because they weren't actually invited. Okay. The Gemara continues various other miscellaneous things about proper behavior. Omer Rav Bar Chana, Omer Rav Yitzchok Bar Shmuel Bar Marta, Omer Rav Mishum Yosef or Rav Yosi Ish Hutzel, Minayin She'en Sherlin B'Kaldiyim. How do we know that you're not allowed to consult Kaldiyim? Now, Rashi explains that Kaldiyim means Balei Oiv, means people who practice, magicians who practice Oiv magic. However, the Rashbam argues with that and says, what do you mean? Maybe you don't need a different posik to tell you that you're not allowed to. The posik clearly says, Al Tifnu Ela Oivus, you're not allowed to turn to and consult people who do such magic. And in fact, Rashi himself, the Rashbam says that Kaldiyim means stargazers. Chosei HaKochavim, yeah. In fact, so you have the nation of the Kastim that are mentioned in a number of places in Tanakh. Nebuchadnezzar was from that nation. It's sometimes used almost as a synonym for Babel. In English, they're called the Chaldeans. You have, for example, in this week's parasha, actually, when you have that Avraham was an Ur Kastim, if you look in English translations of Tanakh, you'll find they translated as Ur of the Chaldeans. So Chaldeans is the same word Chaldoi as in our Gemara over here. They were experts in astrology and astronomy, and therefore that became kind of a generic name for anybody who's expert in these things. Anyway, so Rashbam explains that it means such people, stargazers, astrologers. Rashi himself, actually, in some other places also explains that Chaldeim are astrologers. Anyway, how do we know you shouldn't ask them? Shenema, because the pasuk says, "Tomim tia im Hashem lekecha," you should be complete and wholesome with Hashem, which means, as Rashi says on that pasuk, it means accept whatever Hashem is gonna send to you is for the best. You don't have to go being choiker achahasidus. You don't have to go looking and trying to foretell and divine the future. With that said, we've shown him point out, we have other Gemaras where we see that people did, that even Chachamim did pay attention to what stargazers said. For example, we had at the end of Masechta Shabbos, we had where Rav Nachman's mother was told by Chaldeim that her son is going to grow up to be a Ganav, and so she made sure he's always wearing a yarmulke. Rav Akiva heard from Chaldeim that his daughter was going to pass away on the night of her wedding, and he was extremely worried about it, etc. So the answer is, you're not allowed to go and consult them, as our Gemara is saying over here. But if they themselves tell you something or you overhear something, then by all means go and pay attention to it. Next, continues Rav Bar Chana, how do we know when you know that another person is greater than you in even one thing? You have to treat him with kavod. Shenema, as we find in Sefer Daniel. In Daniel, it describes over there, after Daryavish and Kodesh had conquered and overthrown Babel, and Daryavish, the king of Madai, became the new king over Paras, Madai, and Babel, and that whole empire. So the pasuk describes that he had three top ministers who were helping him run the government. One of those three was Daniel. And then the pasuk describes, because there was because Daniel had greater spirit in him, he was much smarter than anybody else. And the king was thinking to appoint him in charge of the entire government. In other words, instead of having three top ministers, he would have one prime minister, and that would be Daniel. So we see that because Daniel was greater than Daryavish in at least one way, so Daryavish was treating him with great derecherence. Now, Tosfos points out, actually, that like this, I mean, we have in Pirkei Avos, if you learn even one thing from another person, then you have to call him Rabbi Alufum Yudoi, like we find the David and Achitofel. So Tosfos says, here we're talking about where you didn't even learn anything from him. In the Pesukim over there, we don't find that Daryavish learned anything from Daniel. Just the fact that he realized that Daniel is higher than him, is greater than him, made him treat him with derech eretz. Tosfos says, and Marashal says also, that what it means is, even if you haven't learned anything from him, then he's still high of lunag by kavod. Ion Yaakov points out another thing as well. When you think about it, with David and Achitofel, who is the greater one between them? David. First of all, he's the king, and second of all, he was a much greater Talmid Chacham. Nevertheless, because he learned two things from Achitofel, he called him Rabbi Alufim Yodoi. Here we're talking about where the other person is taka greater than you, and therefore, for that reason alone, Sarech Lunag by Kavod. That's if you learn from him one halacha, that's what it says in Pirkei Avos. Here we're saying something else. Even if you haven't learned anything from him, just the fact that you know he's greater than you, for that reason alone, chayev lunag by kavod. And the third thing, Rabbi Bar Chana says in the name of this chain of chachamim reaching back to the Yosi Ish Hutzel, the third one is a halacha. If a woman is sitting in a state of clean blood, So we know the Torah tells us at the beginning of Parshas Tazria, after a woman has given birth, she's Tomei for 7 days for a boy and 14 for a girl. After that, you have 33 days for a boy and 66 for a girl, when any bleeding that comes is called Dam Tohar. Even though she's bleeding, even though it's uterine bleeding, nevertheless, she's still Tohar to her husband until the end of the 40 days. So till you reach 7 plus 33, so 40 days for a boy, 80 days for a girl. Then at that point, any bleeding after that would be regular Nidor Suzirus. So during those 33 or 66 days, she's allowed to have relations with her husband. But now, suppose that the 40 or 80 days are over. Now at this point, we're going back to the regular thing. For how long should she avoid having relations with her husband? The problem is, in other words, like this, for the last few weeks, she's been used to that they can have relations even though she's been bleeding. Now, after the 40 or 80 days are over, that's going to change. Therefore, we need a certain period of separation so that she doesn't get confused. So how long does that have to be? Asur l'shamash ad kama. So she's also to have relations. Up to how long? Omer Rav Oina. So Rav says, for the time of an Oina. Now, Rashi explains that means a 24-hour period. The Rashbam disagrees with that and says it means a 12-hour period. This is we have in Hilchos Taras HaMishpacha all the time. When we have Oina Beninus, for example, another onus of separation, you have famously, there's an opinion of the Ur Zeruah that says that whenever we talk about an Oina in connection with that, it's always 24 hours. But Lamaise, except for Oina Beninus, we're not noyig in that. We say all the other ones we consider 12 hours. But here, this is not Negei Halacha nowadays, because eventually, now the Rambam describes, he says, in his times, there was a difference of Minhagim in different places. He says, in most Sfardish countries, he says, they had already accepted the Minhag, that there's no such thing as Dam Torah. Any bleeding during that time, we assume her to be Tomei and off limits to her husband. The Rambam says, I've heard that in Sarfas, in France, they still follow the Din of the Gemara, and they still follow the Din of Dam Torah. But eventually, sometime after the Rambam's times, that changed and they stopped doing it in Ashkenazic countries as well. Nowadays, the universal thing that that any bleeding, any uterine bleeding at any time makes a woman also to her husband. So therefore, this whole thing of Asur l'shamash ad oina is not really relevant. Okay. Now, so we mentioned this Rabbi Yossi Ish Hutzel. So now the Gemara is going to mention he actually had a lot of names. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, who Yosef Ish Hutzel. He's known as Yosef Ishwutzel, who Yosef Ababli, that's another name of him, who Isi ben Gur Aryeh, who Isi ben Yehuda, who Isi ben Gamliel, who Isi ben Mahalala, who Mashmoy, what's his real name? Isi ben Akavya Shmoy. His real name is Isi ben Akavya. Now, why did he have so many names? Marsha wonders why he had so many names. We find, for example, by Moshe and Yisrael had a bunch of names, but we have drushes about them. Here it doesn't say. There is an explanation that what it is that he was on the run from the government, from the Romans or whichever government it was at the time, and therefore he had to keep on changing his name or his father's name in order that they shouldn't catch him. Bechlal, though, when you think about it, many of these names are just variations of the same name. Hutzel is a city in Babel, so Yosef Ish Hutzel and Yosef Ababli are pretty much the same thing. Gur Aryeh and Yehuda, again, are pretty much the same thing. So you don't really have that many different variations. So even apparently, if he did have to change his name or his father's name, he still kept to something fairly close to the original. There is, by the way, the question of who this Yosef Ish Hutzel is actually not, or Yosef Ish Hutzel is not so simple, actually. You have the Gemara in Nida, where there's a debate on a certain point in Halacha between Rav and Rav Asi. This is you have two famous Rav Asis in the Gemara. You have Rabbi Asi, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Yechanan and lived in Eretz Yisrael. And then you have Rav Asi, who was a Talmud Chavar of Rav. So there, the Gemara Nida describes a debate that they had in a matter of halacha, and Rav Asi says in that connection he uses a bunch of these names. So does that mean that it's him? Lav Davka, the Tosfos mentions in some other places, doesn't mean necessarily that it's him. It means like he's sort of borrowing the expression the same way as that Tana Isi ben Gur Aryeh, Isi ben Yehuda, etc. had so many names. The same way my first name being Asi or Isi as well, I also have in common, I have that in common with him, and therefore I have tremendous koyach. And then therefore he's saying to Rav, if you're saying that I deserve to be put in my place, you should realize that I'm much greater than that. Anyway, another example of one of the Chachamim who has a lot of names. Who Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla, who Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chakla, who Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila, who Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha de Shmaita. The Hur Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha, Rashi says, is a separate one. So we have another one. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Tavla is also known as Rabbi Yitzchak ben Chakla and also as Rabbi Yitzchak ben Ila. Then another one, Hur Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha de Shmaita, Hur Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas da Agada. When we mention in connection with halachas, we mention Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha, that's the same one who, when we mention in things about Gadda, we call him Rabbi Yitzchak ben Pinchas. The simonach, for that one, you have a simon to remember which one is which. Shimuna achai v'rei, or really actually the pasuk says, Shmauni achai v'amim. David at one point in Divrei Hayamim gets up to give a speech to the Jewish people to tell them that we're ready to build the Beis Hamikdash and everybody should start giving the davus to it. So he addresses them, Shmauni achai v'amim. So the word Shmauni is similar to the word Shmaita, which means a statement of halacha, and Achai is similar to the word Acha. So that helps us remember that Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha is that we call him Rabbi Yitzchak ben Acha when it comes to Shmaita, and then we call him something else when it comes to Agadah. Okay. Va'omer Rabbi Abachana, Omer Rabbi Yechon, Meshum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. Here's another thing. More advice for life. Echol botzel v'shev batzel. Eat onions and you'll be able to sit in the shade. Meaning, in other words, if you eat things like onions and other vegetables rather than having expensive tastes, you'll be able to continue sitting in the shade of your house rather than having to sell your house in order to raise money. With that said, by the way, there are various places in the Gemara where it implies that that eating raw onions is not good for you, and therefore, so we'd have to be talking about it here about cooked onions. But whatever, the point is, they're a simple kind of food. If you live off those and other simple food like that, then you and your house will be safe. As the word butzel and betzel, it's like a play on words. And he continues, "V'le'techol abzin b'tarnegolin. Don't be eating geese and chickens. V'yehei libcha roidef alecha, and your heart is going to be pursuing you. In other words, you're going to develop a taste and almost like an addiction to them, and you're not going to be able to keep it up because they're expensive." It seems actually from various places in the Gemara that back then, you know, nowadays we think of chicken as the cheapest kind of meat you can get, a lot cheaper than beef. It seems in the time of the Gemara it was the other way around. Chicken was more expensive. I guess, I mean, first of all, they didn't raise them on an industrial scale like they do now. Probably what it was is because usually they kept chickens to lay eggs. So most of the time, the chicken is going to be for that. Only once it's too old to lay eggs, then you shecht it and eat it. So it would have been one of those things like it's an occasional treat, sort of. Anyway, then he continues, reduce the amount you spend on your food and your drink and increase what you spend on your house. So on a poshita level, it means exactly that. Your house is a more long-term investment. So if you have extra money to spend, rather than wasting it on food and drink, spend it on your house. Then Yehoyada points out there's a number of symbolisms in it. Also, your house refers to your place in Olam Haba, so it means you should be storing up assets for that. Your house is also your wife, Beisei Zu Ishtai, so it means instead of spending more money on your own food, spend more of it on your wife. And he says also an interesting thing. It can actually mean your house, but it means like this. So if you have a house and you want to add an extra floor to it, so okay, you might want to do that. The thing is, of course, then it means you're going to be climbing up and down a lot more stairs, and it's going to wear out your body. So, but if you don't eat very much in the first place, if you stay slim, then that won't it won't bother you so much to go up and down. So therefore, by all means, if you reduce the amount that you eat and drink, you'll be able to add more floors to your house without it wearing you out climbing up and down all those stairs. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Then he continues. He also Ula Omar. When Ula came from Eretz Yisrael, he said a similar kind of thing about these points that Rabbi Baba Chana was saying, that you should don't develop expensive tastes in food because you'll have a hard time keeping it up. He says Maslin Maslia B'mar Rab. The people who tell Mishalim, the people who tell like the short punchy proverbs in Eretz Yisrael, they say the following expressions: De Ochel Alisa Toshi B'Ilisa. The one who eats alisa, which is alia, the fat tail of an animal, which means like very fatty, high quality meat, toshi be ilisa, is eventually going to have to hide out in the attic. because he's eventually going to owe people a lot of money. For example, he bought on credit and he doesn't have any money to pay them. So therefore, he's going to have to be hiding out in the attic so for fear that they'll find him. So Elisa, again, the words are similar. Marshab brings from the Oruch, specifically what we're talking about is the butcher is going to come to demand what you owe him for the aliyah and you don't have it. On the other hand, they continued, da'ocho kakuli akikla demasa shachiv. On the other hand, when a person is used to eating kakuli, which is a type of cheap vegetable, then he can sit, and then he can sit comfortably even on the kikla, which means the garbage heap of the city, which is like a very public area. Everybody comes there all the time to dispose of their garbage, and he'll have nothing to be afraid of because nobody will be coming to demand any payments of debts from him. In fact, Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, when you think about it, especially the shochtim tend to do their business close to the garbage heaps, because after all, I mean, their business is pretty dirty and smelly, and you know, it's useful. First of all, people don't really want it in the city itself, and second of all, it's useful to have it near the garbage heap so they can schlep out the nevelus and trefus there easily. So he's right there, right under the noses of the butchers, and he has nothing to worry about because he doesn't owe them any money because he doesn't buy a lot of their fatty meat. Instead, he mostly lives off vegetables. Okay. So now we get into the rest of the perek, or most of the rest of the perek deals with the dinim of the Seder. So now we start getting into the dinim of what foods need to be on the table for the Seder. So it mentions you have to have matzah and maror, and then it meant you have to have shnei tafshilin, which we have the zroya and the beitza, and then it mentions you have to have charoisis. So Pisca, a quotation from the Mishnah, but afo pishen charoisis mitzvah. Even though the charoisis is not a mitzvah, you still have to have it on the table. So they want to ask the Eloi mitzvah me from my maisula. Well, if it's not a mitzvah, then what's the why do you dafka have to have it? Now, by the way, charoisis in the terminology of the Mishnah is really any kind of sharp tasting dip. Earlier in the Masechta, for example, it mentions that if you put flour into charoisis, it's going to become right away chametz. So therefore, you have to get rid of it before Pesach. But so we see from there that charoisis there, Rashi mentions over there, charoisis included vinegar, for example. So it wasn't necessarily charoisis as we think of specifically for Pesach. It just meant any kind of dip for food that has a tart flavor to it. So now the Gemara is saying, well, why do you have to specifically have it if it's not a mitzvah anyway? Amar Rav Ami mishum kappa. The reason is because of kappa. Now, there are two major explanations what kappa is. Rashi says it means you have the juice of the chazeres. So you have five basic types of vegetables that can be used as maror. All of them are bitter, or if they're not bitter now, like lettuce, then they become bitter later. They have a sap or a juice in them that's bad for a person. So therefore, the charoisis helps neutralize that. The Rashbam brings that, and then he brings another explanation, that kappa is a type of worm that lives in the chazeres. Now, in that case, how would he be allowed to eat it with worms in it? In al pi halacha, if you have after a vegetable or a fruit was picked, if worms start developing in it, you're allowed al pi halacha to eat the fruit together with the worm in it. Only if the worms ever came out of it, only if they grew while it was attached to the ground, or if after it was detached, they came out of the fruit and then went back in, then they're also. So here, in other words, so we'd be talking about these worms grow in the lettuce or in the horseradish or whatever it is that you're using for maror. And they grow in it only after it's detached, apparently, and they never come out of it. So la halacha, you're allowed to eat them, but on the other hand, they're dangerous. So therefore, the point of that, the kappa helps neutralize those worms, it kills them. So because of that, you have to have charoisis. So the Gemara mentions in this connection, Amar Rav Asi, kappa dechosa chama. If a person ate lettuce and now he's suffering from the effect of the kappa, however you define kappa, then the remedy for it is chama. He should eat afterwards. He should eat a radish. Kappa de chama. Now the chama itself, the radish also has kappa in it, whether it means the sharpness or whether it means the worm. So the remedy for that is kauti, is to eat leeks. Kappa to kauti, then if a person ate leeks and he's suffering from the kappa of that, so apparently like each one, the kappa is not as strong as the previous one, but still it's strong enough that it can have an effect. So if he does that and he's suffering from that, chamimi, then he should drink hot water. And in fact, kapa de kulu chamimi. In fact, all of them can be remedied by drinking hot water. Ad de hochi vahochi, meanwhile, meaning while he's waiting for the water to boil, for example, neima hochi, he should say the following lachash to counteract the kapa. You should say, kapa kapa, dechirna loch, I remember you, or the shev benosech, and your seven daughters, or the tamni kalosech, and your eight daughters-in-law. So this is some kind of lachash that the same way as the lachshim that we learned in previous dafim, which it helps some kind of supernatural thing to push off the effects of it until he can get the hot water or whatever other remedies we said, and that will neutralize it altogether. That's a lachash means like a spell. So it's a spell. What it means dafka kappa, how does kappa have seven daughters and eight daughters-in-law? But that's the way these spells don't always have to make sense. Okay. Now, on the other hand, continues the Gemara, Rabbi Lozer bat Tzadik, I'm a mitzvah fuller. Rabbi Lozer bat Tzadik in the Mishnah disagrees and says charoses is an actual mitzvah. So my mitzvah, in that case, what mitzvah? The other things that are on the Seder plate, we understand what the mitzvah is, but what's this? Rabbi Levi omer zeichel tapuach. Rabbi Levi says it's in remembrance of the apple trees. We find in the Gemara in Sota, based on Psukim and Shirashirim, that the Jewish women in Mitzrayim, they were afraid to give births in the houses because the Mitzrayim are on the prowl looking for baby boys to throw in the Nile. So they would go out into the fields and give birth under the apple trees, tachas ha-tapuach eirautich, as it says in Shirashirim. So therefore, in memory of that is why we have the charoses that has a taste of apples there. And so it shows, in other words, it's to thank Hashem for the nest that the babies survived all of that, and it's also to remember the bitochen that these Jewish women had having babies even under such conditions. Rabbi Yechanan amar zeichel letit. Rabbi Yechanan says it's in remembrance of the mud the clay that they had to work with in Mitzrayim. Amar Abayas, Abayas says, in fact, you need both. Because of that, you have to make the charoses taste sharp and tart, which means, therefore, you put apples in it, so it has a tart taste. You also have to make it thick. Rashi says, by adding other kinds of vegetables or ingredients into it in order to make it very thick. You have to make it sharp tasting to remember the apples, but and to make it thick to remember the clay that we worked with in Mitzrayim. In fact, Marsha also adds that so like this, you're doing it davka when we eat maru, because by maru is chayim ba'avoda kosher b'chomer v'levenim. And we actually have there's things that we put in it also to remember the straw. You find the Rebbe mentions in the Haggadah that the old minhag used it. So Tosfos, first of all, mentions over here, there are other ingredients that we add to which the Jewish people or Hashem are compared in Shir HaShirim. We add nuts, for example, because we find the Jewish people are compared to nuts. Ginas Eglez Yeradzi. I mean, Jewish people are nuts sometimes, but that's another matter. But anyway, also, for example, so different other things we add dates because in Shir HaShirim, Omarti El Abitomar, and various other things like that. So the Rebbe mentions in the Haggadah, the old minhag used to be to have five ingredients: apples, pears, walnuts, ginger, and cinnamon. Eventually, the minhag developed to, and the point of the ginger and the cinnamon, in particular, you didn't have ground up ginger or cinnamon; you had stalks of them, which resembles the straw that they had to put in the bricks. However, the Rebbe points out eventually they developed a chashash that there's chametz mixed in with the ginger or the cinnamon, which is why we leave it out nowadays. Anyway, the Gemara says, Tanya Kavaseda Rabbi Yechanan, we learn a braisa, like what Rabbi Yechanan says, that the main thing is to remember to remember the mud, the clay in Mitzrayim, and therefore tavlin zeichel teven, so the spices that you put into the charoses are to remember the straw that they had, that at first the Mitzrayim were giving them straw, and then they stopped giving that. Charoses zeichel tit, and the charoses as a whole is to remember the clay that they had to work with in Mitzrayim. And in fact, Omer of Elazar ben Tzadik, Kachoy Omer Tagrei Cherech Shib Yerushalayim, the merchants who sold things out of windows in Yerushalayim, Cherech is like another word in Shir HaShirim, Meitzitz Min HaCharakim. So these are people who had shops in Yerushalayim during the time of the Second Beis Mikdash, and they would be peeking out of the windows of their stores and offering things for sale. They would announce before Yerushalayim, they would announce before Pesach, Boyu Tlu Lachem Tavlin LeMitzvah, come buy yourself spices for the mitzvah. So we see, like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik. Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik is saying, I'm telling you in the Mishnah that the charos is a mitzvah. You see that these shopkeepers in Yerushalayim, Bizman Shabbos Mikdash Kayim, knew that as well, and they would announce that you should come by for the mitzvah. So the Maisa, I mean, the halacha to a certain extent is not really like Rabbi Elazar about tzaddik. We don't make a bracha on the charoses, but nevertheless, we do have all these details that it mentions over here with all the symbolism and everything, and we do that accordingly. It's a minhag, but it says so. It's not a requirement in halacha, but yeah. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach of Geula, Aleph Cheshvan, second year of Shchodesh. In Yalp Shimoni, it brings that the first Beis Hamikdash was supposed to be dedicated in Cheshvan because they finished constructing it. It says in Sefer Melachim, they finished constructing it in Cheshvan, but they didn't actually open it for business and do the Chanukah Zabayis until the following Tishrei. And it was similar to the Mishkan that Moshe built. Moshe finished building it in Kislev, but they only set it up in Nisan. And therefore Hashem owed Kislev. And then so Hashem said, I have to pay back Kislev. And that's why eventually Hashem made the Nes Chanukah happen in Kislev. So the same way over here, the Yalkut continues that Hashem is going to pay back Mal Cheshvan in the future when it comes to the Chanukah space in Mikdash HaShlishi. And in fact, it'll be Kiflayim B'Doshia. So as great as Chanukah was, this is going to be double and more than double as great that Cheshvan is going to have that mind. So that in Cheshvan the Chanukah Sabayis will be whatever month Mashiach comes in, the Chanukah Sabayis will take place in Cheshvan and then in Cheshvan after it's built. Okay. Continuing with Halachas of Shabbos, shortly before Shabbos, a person needs to ask the members of his household and ask them gently, "Have you taken challah?" In Eretz Yisrael, you also have to mention, have you taken Meiser? And tell them and tell them to light the candles. And then one more thing. A person has to feel around in his clothes in Shabbos, but on Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos begins, make sure there's nothing mukta in there, there's no needles stuck in there or whatever, even in a place where there's an Erev, because there may still be a mukta thing. So therefore, you have to check your pockets before Shabbos.